This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com.
Welcome to the Toastmasters Podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
Some may think that living on a small island, that opportunities for growth might be somewhat limited. But our guest today, who lives on that island, boasts the highest club growth per capita. And today we'll meet one of the drivers behind that growth. If you're a club officer or looking to start or rebuild a club, you'll want to listen up. Ryan, where are we traveling to today?
We're heading to District 74. Today's guest, Ravine Lama, lives off the eastern coast of Africa on the island country of Mauritius. A Toastmaster of nearly 30 years, Ravine initially joined Toastmasters in Nepal in 1992. He moved to Mauritius in 2006, where he joined Port Louis Toastmasters Club. In 2017, Ravine set out to help Mauritius emulate the levels of new club growth he experienced previously in Nepal. Ravine Lama, welcome to the Toastmasters Podcast.
Welcome.
Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, Greg. And greetings from the paradise island called Mauritius. Pleasure being here.
It's fantastic to have you with us. And I thought to start out our conversation today, many of our listeners, I'm sure, have heard of Mauritius, but I'd venture to say most of them have probably not visited the country. So could you please kindly provide a description of your country, both geographically and maybe a bit of the environment culturally as well?
So Ryan and Greg, if you look at the world map, one of the biggest islands which you can spot is called Madagascar. So if you look to the right of Madagascar, in the middle of the Indian Ocean is a small tiny dot you'll see. That dot is Mauritius. It's a small island nation. We've got a population of 1.2 million people. Mostly Indians who came here as indentured labor during the time of the French and the British. But the people here live in perfect harmony. It's known as the melting pot of all cultures. And the capital of Mauritius is Port Louis. Port Louis Toastmasters Club, which was the first club set up 20 years ago.
Wow, that's fantastic. Now, we're going to get back to Mauritius and, of course, Toastmasters on the island very, very quickly. You're originally from Nepal, so I'm just kind of curious that you were also involved in Nepal. How did the growth of Toastmasters, how did that take off in Nepal? Like, what were some of the things that you did there?
In Nepal, I was basically responsible for setting up the Toastmaster movement together with another Japanese called Michio Ishihara, who was the head of the International Monetary Fund. So when we started the first Toastmasters, growth was a bit slow because people were very reluctant and there was always that fear of public speaking. But gradually, you know, the clubs started growing. But it was only in 2003 when I moved to Mauritius. Actually, I was traveling back and forth to set up a newspaper in Mauritius. So 2006, I came here. In the meantime, clubs were growing quite rapidly in Nepal. It was basically the network which we had. Most of our members were there. They were more like leaders who went around talking about the Toastmasters and how it would improve, help you with your communication and leadership skills. And it just took off.
So I understand when you moved to Mauritius, you weren't currently part of a district at the time. But can you give us a sense of what was the landscape like in Mauritius in terms of Toastmasters?
When I came here in 2006, we barely had about five or six clubs. The Port Louis Toastmasters Club was the oldest. It had a lot of very, very good members. And I was traveling back and forth between Nepal and Mauritius because of business. Growth was very slow because it's a very small island, population of just 1.2 million, and it took a very long time. I was not a very regular member because of my frequent travels, but I always made it a point to try and attend as many meetings as possible. In 2017, we had about eight clubs, and a fellow Toastmaster, Bob Ward, who had traveled to South Africa, decided that it would be great, you know, if Mauritius could join a district. Now, to join a district, you had to have a certain number of clubs. So when they applied to Toastmasters International, the response they got was, you need to have at least 20 clubs, which was something impossible for Mauritius. That's what everybody felt. The application did not go through. It was rejected because we didn't have the required number of clubs. Now, I didn't know anything about this. In 2019, when Bob finally caught up with me, we were having drinks together, and he said that, you know, it would be great to join the district. Now, because I was in the newspaper business, I used to interact with a lot of CEOs. It suddenly dawned on me, you know, the mistake most of the clubs were making was the fact that they were looking for individual members to set up a Toastmasters club. Now, to charter a club, you need 20 members, which is the standard requirement for a Toastmasters club. Now, to get 20 members was a bit of a challenge. So I sat and thought, I said, look, if I could convince one person in an organization, they would get me the members. Like, say, for example, I went to corporates. I went to a bank, spoke to the CEO, and said, look, Toastmasters is great for learning, it's for developing your leadership and communication skills. And I sold them the idea. And that is how it clicked. So then we also formed a group of senior Toastmasters. And I said, look, I need your support. I will get you the entry into all these organizations, but I need a backup. Backup in the sense, somebody needs to be a mentor to the club and a sponsor. So one of the requirements to get your DTM is to sponsor a club. And that is how the whole chain of events started moving. So we started opening clubs very, very rapidly, basically because I think it was the team effort which came into play. Earlier, everybody was thinking in different directions, but this time the focus was very clear. We needed to join a district. We needed to join District 74, which is South Africa, closest to us. I got in touch. Then the pandemic happened. But even during the pandemic, on Zoom sessions, we still managed to open clubs. We were, I think, one club short of 15. And our target is to reach about 24 clubs by the end of 2021.
Wow.
So I liked how you talked about the fact that you changed a little bit of the focus. Instead of everybody just focusing on gaining new members and focusing on working on their pathways, projects, et cetera, you actually said, we have a goal. We need to become a district. And you started putting things together. I thought that's actually quite impressive. I'm curious, you said you were in the newspaper business, you went to various corporations and you told them about Toastmasters. What were some of the other things that you shared with these companies besides, you know, besides saying, you know, it's fairly inexpensive and very valuable education? What were some of the things that you said to try to convince them that this was really a good thing?
One of the things which always worked was the networking opportunities. I said, look, if you look at the network of Toastmasters, it's global. And I gave the example of when my son was going to university in London. We had never traveled to the UK. So I sat and I searched for the clubs in the UK and discovered there were 60 clubs. So I wrote to 60 Toastmaster clubs in the UK, saying that I'm coming to UK for the first time, I'd like to visit your club. 55 responded. 5 were corporate clubs, so I didn't expect any response from them. But 55 Toastmaster presidents responded saying, please feel free to come be our guest. So that was the kind of camaraderie, the kind of fellowship Toastmasters could offer. And this was something, you know, which clicked, you know, because your network is your net worth. Reaching out globally through just one organization can create a big impact in your career. And that is what I think appealed to a lot of corporate CEOs who said, hey, this is something really great for staff. And it worked.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because something that just popped into my head that they never thought of based on what you said was that, let's say that a company has offices in another country, right? When a person is maybe going to that country, obviously they're going to be introduced to people at the office, but they probably don't really know anybody else. So now all of a sudden, if they're a member of Toastmasters, they can find a Toastmaster. So let's say they're going from Port Louis, they're going to, well, London, England, you said the UK. Well, yes. They can visit or they can go to a local Toastmasters club there, and immediately they're going to be making some new friends and some contacts as well. That's phenomenal.
Absolutely. And then you're always welcomed at any Toastmasters club anywhere in the world.
That's true.
Javine, you've had success now in two different countries building clubs, both in Nepal, of course, and in Mauritius. Those are two very different places, I would imagine, culturally, geographically, and probably in many other ways as well. I'm curious if there are strategies that worked in Nepal or that would work in Nepal that didn't or wouldn't work in Mauritius.
I think it's the mindsets. For example, the kind of colleagues I had in Nepal were phenomenal. The kind of enthusiasm and passion they have, even now, they are all over. I see them, all the Toastmaster members from Nepal, you'll see them on Clubhouse. They're not satisfied with their meetings at the club, so they meet at the Clubhouse. And they're there every day. So this is the kind of passion they have. Also, because Nepal is a very big country, we've got a population of 29 million, different terrains, different cities. So the team there now is, they've joined District 41, which is India, but they are going all out. They're also creating some kind of a record, you know, opening up clubs. Mauritius is a bit different because it's a much smaller country. Now, one of the strategies I had was I met the largest force in Mauritius is the police. So I met the police chief and I gave him the same spiel. Sometimes, you know, when you meet people, you click and that meeting happened, you know, like magic. So the commissioner of police, the CP, was very impressed. He said, yes, Ravi, we should do. So my idea was, I said, look, you've got a big police force. Let's open one in the north, one in the south, one in the east, one in the west. So I went for one meeting and straight away, you know, the idea of four clubs came up. Now, in addition to the police, they also have a special mobile force called the SMF, which is something like the army, but unofficial. There also, we are thinking of opening a club there. And then the same with corporates. It was much easier talking to corporates. Like I went to Absa Bank. Absa Bank has got more than 200 employees. So I said, we just need 20 to open a club. So you open one club, then you say, hey, this is working. Let's open a second club. Same with Accenture. Accenture has got two clubs. Then I went to Mauritius Revenue Authority, the MRA, the tax guys. So we started with one club. We've got 40 members. So my premise was, I said, look, 40 is too big for a club, you know, because each member will not get the opportunity to speak. So I said, let's wait for a couple of months and then we do a breakaway and set up two clubs. So the idea now is to set up in every corporation at least two clubs. So what happens? The growth then becomes phenomenal.
Wow.
Those are really good lessons, because if someone is looking at starting a club, if a club is trying to spawn another club, is to realize that although the end goal is the same, right? Create new clubs and have successfully healthy clubs with great number of members. But sometimes the road to get there might be different.
Very true. Now, for example, I suddenly realized that the University of Mauritius has 10,000 students. I said, hey, this is a gold field. Because and this happened during the conversation started just before the pandemic. So everything got stalled. But now the borders opening up on the 15th of July. We'll be going back, talking to the University of Mauritius, university, the Mascarene, African Leadership University. So basically, we're going to tap all the different universities and see how many clubs we can set up.
That's awesome. It sounds like you're talking about a recipe for success. And I want to go back to a quote in the article, and I want you to share it with us a little bit about what you meant by that. It says here that if you want something in life, you ask for it.
Absolutely. I think those are the three magic letters that I always say that I think in life, you need to take that step. You need to take that initiative. Be bold. It's like in school, you know, you're always dreading to ask the girl out. And then secretly, the girl also likes you, but she's been waiting. She's saying, I was waiting for you to ask me. And then you left Ayn Rand, and Trevor Noah also mentioned it in his book, Born a Crime. He said the same thing. You know, if you want something, ask for it.
That's really great. Yeah, I can see how that runs through everything you do. Amazing. I think most of our listeners to this show are probably more likely to be involved with building membership in an individual club, or maybe trying to charter just one single new club in their area. And I wonder if you might have a tip or two gleaned from your experiences in both countries that can apply to those goals of meeting a club's membership goals individually, or again, chartering one brand new club as opposed to a plethora of clubs.
The easiest and quickest way is to find out the mover and shaker. There is always one mover and shaker in any area, any locality. Contact that person. Talk to them about how Toastmasters can. And most of these people are very good public speakers. So once they realize what Toastmasters is all about, you can use them as Toastmaster ambassadors to open up clubs. And they are more than willing to help out. As I said, if you just ask them. But you need to find that mover and shaker. That person then becomes a role model. So it could be a lady, it could be a guy, but you need to identify that one person.
I love that. Can you give us a little bit more about how do you go about finding that person? What are the kinds of questions you ask, or the types of people that you might approach to finally stumble upon the mover and shaker that's going to be the key?
Say, for example, when I was at the chairman of the board at Le Bocage International School, I said, and there were some very good speakers in the school. So I just picked on one and two. I said, look, why don't you talk to your classmates and tell them that we will be starting a Gavel Club, which is the junior club of Toastmasters, if they want to improve their communication leadership skills. Now, because they were good speakers, the classmates listened to them. So we managed to form a club. If you go out, try and see who are the influencers, because nowadays it's very easy. If you go on social media, you know who are the people who have a large following. Go up to them and ask.
You're absolutely right, is looking for those influencers. And now with social media, you might as well take advantage of it, of all the different opportunities, and go to where they are. If they're on YouTube, you go to YouTube. If they're on TikTok, you go to TikTok. If you're on Instagram, you go to Instagram or Facebook or wherever they happen to be. Makes a lot of sense. And that seems to be working.
The other point I always mention is that when you go for a job interview, what is it that the interview looks for? Because I said, look, all of you all have the same qualifications. But what is that one thing they look for is the level of confidence with which you can share your thoughts and your ideas. And that you can get by joining a Toastmasters club. It always works.
That's great.
I just want to ask one last thing before we get ready to wrap up is, I like in the article you talked about this friendly rivalry among the clubs. And I know that's very, very common. And in fact, that's really big in our district here. How do you define that out of curiosity, and how do you instill it?
In Mauritius, particularly, we have the Toastmasters Convention. It's an annual event where all the clubs participate. So each club takes turn of organizing and hosting the event. Now, because of that, what happens is that healthy rivalry is always there, that, okay, my club is better than your club. So,
of course.
Like, for example... So, for example, in Portly Toastmasters, a month or two before the finals, the members are rehearsing like crazy. You know, we have internal competitions simply because we have to beat the other club. Mm-hmm. And that is the goal which drives the speakers to perform, you know, rehearse. Once is not enough. You keep on rehearsing. You have a second rehearsal, third rehearsal, until you become perfect. And the Portly Toastmasters Club has been winning a lot of awards because they are so committed. And the other clubs also follow suit. All of them have that same drive. They said, hey, we need to be Portly Toastmasters Club. And so it is a very tough competition. So that rivalry is there. This time, the rivalry went a bit further where we all got together and said, hey, we need to join a district. Let's work together. So we formed a WhatsApp group where we had all the presidents of the different clubs, and we would share information of what was happening, what was the conversation with Toastmasters International, where we were in touch with South Africa. Rivalry is good, you know, because it also creates that sense of respect amongst your colleagues.
Absolutely. Of course, if you belong to multiple clubs, that's a tough call. Which one is the best club?
Yes.
Right. Well, Javine, this has been really great. I appreciate you coming on the show today, sharing with us so generously from your experience. At this point, I'd like to ask you to share with us where our listeners can connect with the mover and shaker in Mauritius, Mr. Javine himself. Should they want to follow up with you, maybe ask you some questions, learn more from your wisdom, or what have you, what would be the best place for people to get in touch?
You can send me an email. My email is ravin.lama@gmail.com. I can share my mobile number. The country code is 230, and my number is 5253-4050. I'm there on LinkedIn. I'm there on Facebook. So feel free to connect with me anytime. I'll be most happy to help out.
Yes, and don't forget to check out the article, Chartering on a Small Island, on which this conversation was based on in the July issue of the Toastmaster magazine.
Well, Ravine Lama, thank you so much for joining us today on the Toastmasters podcast. It's been a real pleasure.
Ryan and Greg, the pleasure is equally mine. Thank you so much for inviting me for this recording. It's been a great pleasure.
You're most welcome. It's been an absolute honor.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.